at done up in northern Arizona this morning, and everyone was in good spirits there. At least most everybody was. Just about everybody showed there today, so it was really nice. This is our Sabbath when we have a short sermon, and then we'll take a brief break and then have a Bible study, and I think I outlined that in the announcements for those of you that read them. And we'll proceed with that format. We've been going through a series on godly leadership from the book of Nehemiah. And in the first two chapters, we went taking each chapter and having a lesson from that that God would have us to learn for various reasons. And we are studying that because in 586 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire took over Jerusalem. And the walls were destroyed and knocked down. The temple was burned. The people dispersed. Most of them deported to Babylon, which was the Babylonians' method of taking over an area, and they'd take the people out and replace them with somebody else. And then in 535, God moved Cyrus, king of Persia, who had taken over the Babylonians, the Persian Empire did, and he made a decree to let some of the Jews return. And they were in this process, and it was over 100 years, they were in the process of returning to Jerusalem, working on the temple, and now building the walls. And Nehemiah, being a cupbearer, decided that he wanted to get busy and do God's work of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And so he prayed about the situation, which our lesson from Nehemiah chapter 1, that a leader will take it to God, put it in God's hands, pray about the situation, and then end up taking action. In chapter 2, we saw how Nehemiah used wisdom in bringing it about. And it wasn't something that he pushed. It was something that he went to God about and he thought about and used wisdom in moving that forward. And now we get into chapter 3. And if you received the announcement and knew we were going into chapter 3 and read it, or if you read it before, you may have gone through it and it seems like one of those books that, or those chapters that, it's kind of dry. It's kind of like reading through some of Numbers or some of Chronicles, where just a list of people and it names names and this person and that person, yada, yada, yada. Okay, now let me get to the next chapter so I can learn something. One commentator said of Nehemiah chapter 3, it's a colorless memorandum of assignment. Well, I believe it's more than that. And what seems initially to be possibly a boring chapter can actually be a chapter that we can learn how to do God's work. Now, we're applying this series not just from the perspective of learning history and what Nehemiah did and what they did in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, but we look at it from the perspective that we, as those that God has called at this time to do the work of God, are preparing the way for the return of Jesus Christ. It's part of the job of the church. And we are going to be, according to the scripture, when Christ returns, be rebuilding the walls of salvation that Satan has torn down. And so we're in the process of learning how to do God's work, and so we can learn lessons from that perspective. And we can look at it even personally as a larger church group, that we've had some walls broken down recently, and we're kind of in the process of rebuilding some of the walls that have been broken down in the church due to certain conflicts and so forth. And on a local level, just as building the church, doing God's work. And so these are lessons that can have applications in many areas of our lives. Nehemiah chapter 3 shows several things. One is Nehemiah's gift for administration. And it goes through and there are 44 separate groups that he's working with to build the walls and complete the task that he set out to do. And he's organizing them and setting them in order, and we'll go through some of the things from that. And it shows how the work is done by many people. Nehemiah did not build the walls of Jerusalem. The people did, under Nehemiah's direction. And they worked together to do the work. When you read through the chapter, you'll see things, and this group was doing this, and then you'll see phrases like next to him and next to them and after them. In other words, is this group working alongside this group, alongside that group, to finish the wall together? And there's a principle here that everyone has a job to do. You know, when we talk about things like the gifts of the Spirit and working together, and everybody's got a part in the church and in the work, sometimes we have problems seeing where we fit. And don't you say, well, okay, yeah, that's nice to talk about. Well, where do I fit? I try this and I don't quite fit there, and I try that and I don't quite fit there. It's like a guy who talked about his work history. And he was frustrated in the same way, trying to figure out where he fits. And he said, my first job was working in an orange juice factory. But I got canned because I couldn't concentrate. He said, and then I worked in the woods as a lumberjack, but I saw that I just couldn't hack it, so they gave me the axe. Frustrated, he said, after that I tried to be a tailor, but I just wasn't suited for it, because mainly it was just a so-so job. I worked as a baker, but didn't make enough dough. I tried working in a muffler factory, but that was exhausting. I wanted to be a barber, but I just couldn't cut it. Attempted to be a deli worker, but anyway, I sliced it. I just couldn't cut the mustard. He's obviously frustrated, so he said, I studied a long time to be a doctor, but I just didn't have any patience. I became a professional fisherman, but discovered I couldn't live on my net income. Managed to get a good job working as a pool maintenance company, but the work was just too draining. Found a job as an electrician interesting, but the work was shocking. After many years of trying to find steady work, I finally got a job as a historian, until I realized there was no future in it. So sometimes we just don't know where to fit. But the fact is, we all do fit in the body of Christ. And we all have a part to do, and it's up to us to look to see why God called us and where we fit. Turn to Nehemiah chapter 2. Nehemiah chapter 2, and as we begin our study on lessons from Nehemiah, we need, as we are a part of the body of Christ, to be able to say, as they said in Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 18, it says, so they said, let's rise up and build. And they set their hands to do this good work. You know, we must be involved. We've got to realize that God has called us for a purpose. He's given the church a work to do, and that we need to be a part of that. And we're going to rise up and build, and we're not going to be holding it back. We're not going to be dragging on it. We're going to be participating and giving in that work. Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 20. So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. So we have a part to do in the work. Nehemiah built his team around a central rallying point, and that was doing the work of God. He reminded them, we prayed to God, we put it in his hands, we're doing his work, and so let's get busy doing that. They were discouraged about the condition of the city. They looked at it, and for 100 years they had been building on the city, and some had been accomplished, but it was still in a lot of rubble. They could have looked at it and said, well, it's just too much. I don't want to be a part of it. But instead they said, a lot needs to be done. Let's just get to busy and work, even though it's discouraging. You know, God talks about Jerusalem as being his prime city. One of the many scriptures, Psalm 48, verse 2, says, Jerusalem is beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. And what was supposed to be this beautiful city was not. I think we can look at the church sometime too and say, you know, God says that he calls you out and you're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a peculiar people, a special people. And we look and say, well, really, when you look compared to the church down the street, I mean, you go up here and I think they got 10 or 15,000 people in their congregation. We don't look as though we're very well put together. It can be discouraging. They long to see the splendor of the new Jerusalem rebuilt, and we long to see the splendor of the new Jerusalem that will come down as a result of Christ's work and what he's doing now in preparation for that. They were longing to do the work, and a work that God was pleased with. Well, there's a place in Corinthians that says, whatever you eat or drink, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. You know, if we keep God in mind that, God, we're doing this for you. We're working on your behalf to please you and move forward. Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 1, let's begin. It says, and Eliashib, the high priest, and his fellow priests went to work to rebuild the sheep gate, and they dedicated it and set its doors in place. So they had started doing the work and got it set up, and Nehemiah had organized that. But where did they start? What is the first verse? Well, the first verse, I think, is important, and I don't think it's there by accident, but they began at the sheep gate, the place where the sheep entered into Jerusalem. And what was significant about that? Well, when sacrifices were offered to God, that is where the animals came in for the sacrifices and the offering to God. And so they began at a place that would point them toward God as an offering, as a sacrifice. And of course, we are to be living sacrifices, as it says in Romans. And we are to present our bodies as a living sacrifice. So have God in mind and dedicating it to God. It says they dedicated it and set its doors in its place. In other words, put God first. And so as we are working to do the work, and as a church, as an organization who are trying to please God, make sure that is the key. What does God want us to do instead of in it for a personal reason, personal glory, or any such thing? So they had a time of dedication right at the beginning of the construction project. We open services with prayer. We're dedicating ourselves to God. We close with prayer to dedicate ourselves to God and give him glory. That's what we need to be doing and how we need to be going about it. Matthew chapter 7, keep your place in Nehemiah because that's where we'll be working out of. Again, keep in mind it's about his glory and not our labor. Sometimes it's, oh God, you know, I've got so much to do. I've got so many responsibilities. I've got so many things in life. And I'm just too busy. Or make excuses or reasons or whatever. Matthew 7:21 says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father. Again, it's not just about how much I can do. It's not about me. It's about doing the will of the Father. And many will say in that day, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, done many wonders in your name? And I'll say, I never knew you, you who practice lawlessness. No matter how much even biblical knowledge we've got, no matter how many things we do, if it's not focused in the right direction, it's not going to be worth much. So first of all, we dedicate it to God. As we go along in Nehemiah chapter 3, we see that it's about people. It's about groups of people working together with other groups of people, about individuals working with other groups of people. And that's what life is about, isn't it, is relationships. You know, he didn't call us to go up onto a mountain somewhere and meditate on our navels or to be by ourselves as hermits. He's called us to be here with one another. And doing so is difficult sometimes. So as I go through, I'm going to give these as examples, and there'll be six principles to help us work well with others. Six principles to help us work well with others. And you can apply many of these in principle in a job situation, in the church. And you realize that this is the way things are. And we don't get frustrated about it. Just realize, okay, here it is. Now what do I do with it? And how does God hold me responsible? So let's look at six principles to help us work well with others. First of all, one principle is that leaders must set the example. If you're going to be a leader, you got to be an example to others. Don't ask somebody to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. Be an example. Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 1 again. It said, Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren, the priests, and built the sheep gate. You see how it starts? You got the high priest out there. I mean, he's the one that would come before God on the Day of Atonement and make the sacrifices and be the one that basically was the star of the show, if you will. It was obviously about God. But yet he was the one that was kind of like the most important guy around. And the high priest was out there building the wall. He got his hands dirty with the rest of the people. It wasn't like Nehemiah wasn't sitting back and saying, well, you guys go ahead. You know, I was the cupbearer, by the way. You know, and I sat in the king's court, and I know wine. You know, I'll sit back and drink wine while you do the work. The high priest didn't sit back and say, well, I'm the guy, you know, and not for me. You guys wouldn't have a relationship with God. You know, all the work I do on atonement, that's enough. You guys, no, he got out there and got busy. He swung a hammer. He piled stones on top of one another. He did what was necessary to build the wall, along with, as it says, his brothers, the priests. They built that sheep gate. And so a leader needs to set the example. Something else is interesting here, that the leaders are to set the examples. And we look to the leaders and say, okay, well, they're doing a good job, and they're doing a good job, so I would like to follow that good example. But what happens when the leader messes up? What happens when leaders not doing a good job? What should your response be? Let's move ahead a little bit to Nehemiah chapter 13. We'll take a little view as to what happened further on in the book when Nehemiah ended up going back to his job as the cupbearer in Babylon. And while he was gone, here's what happened. I'll give you the short version right now. The end part of verse 6, it says, after some time, I received permission and returned to Jerusalem. And so Nehemiah had been away, came back to Jerusalem, and it says, and there I was shocked to find that Eliashib allowed Tobiah to use a room in the temple. Now, Tobiah was their arch enemy. He was one of those who was trying to stop the job from being done, and he lied about them and persecuted them and all sorts of things. Now here's the high priest who is selling a storage unit to Tobiah in the temple. And so here was the guy that starts off this chapter and starts off building the sheep gate and a great example of getting out there and doing the work, and now all of a sudden he's turned. He's doing the wrong thing. What, does everybody give up and quit and say, well, if the high priest is going to do that, well, I guess I don't have any hope, or I don't want to be a part of a group where that guy's going to, you know, start doing the wrong thing. Verse 8, Nehemiah said, I was furious and threw out all of Tobiah's belongings. I gave orders for the rooms to be ritually purified and the temple equipment and grain offerings and incense put back. Even with respected leadership, you follow them in good works. You follow them as long as they follow God. If they don't follow God, you don't follow them. You don't follow the example that they set. You keep doing your work. There's another example of this as we go on down the line. Okay, so in working with people, realize that leaders must set the example. And if you're the leader, realize people are looking to you to be a good example. Another point in working with all kinds of people is that God uses all kinds of people. God uses all kinds of people. It's not just a group of elite. You know, it wasn't just the priests working on the walls. It was interesting when Herod had the temple rebuilt in his time that he trained priests to work on the temple, because only the priests were to work on the temple, but that was another situation. But Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 8, you see that the high priest was out there working, the leaders were out there working, they were involved. But now let's look and see what else was going on. Nehemiah chapter 3 verse 8, it says, Uzziel, the son of Hariah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired the next section. Well, you're building a wall that was made of predominantly of stone, and of course the timbers for the, to hold parts of the wall up, and timbers for the gates and so forth. And now here's the goldsmith out there working on the wall. I didn't say what type of a goldsmith, but he could have been a jeweler. You know, working, making rings and pretty things, and working that way. And he could have said, you get me out there working on a wall with stones? You kidding me? I'm a goldsmith. I work with the finest metal in the world, and you want me to work with stupid rocks? No thanks. No, it says the goldsmith was out there working on the wall. Now, what is it that you do, and why can't you help? What status do we have where we're not good, we're too good for, or we're just not used to that? I've never tried anything like that before. Now it goes on in verse 8 to say, and Hananiah, one of the perfume makers, made repairs next to that. Well, now we got a goldsmith and a perfume maker working on the wall. You know, if anybody would have an excuse, you'd think, perfume maker. I mean, obviously, he's not going to want to get out and do hard work. Didn't use that. He got out there and did the job. As you read through this, I didn't read anywhere where it says, and, Bob the carpenter got out there and did the job. No, there were carpenters, no doubt. There are people who have been trained in some of these things, no doubt. It doesn't say in Joe the engineer, got out and engineered the wall, or Jack the stonemason, or contractors. What it shows are guys like the goldsmith, guys like the perfume maker, who are getting out there and building a wall, and chances are had never touched a brick, had never erected a timber because of their chosen profession. Sometimes people hesitate to help out because I've never done anything like that before. Well, jump in and try it. Get involved. What excuse are you using? I'm afraid of getting up in front of people, or whatever excuse we might use and say, well, I'd rather not be involved with that because that's not me. I mean, you don't have to become somebody else to do the work, but when the time needs to be done to chip in and to help out the whole group, you get in and do it and be faithful. Nehemiah chapter 3 verse 12 says, and Shalom, the son of Helosha, and his daughters repaired the next section. So here's Helosha, and he's out there with his girls. He doesn't have any guys. He's not a Fogelson. He's out there with all those girls. More like Messer. But he's not going to let them off because, well, they're just girls. I can't do anything because I'm a woman. I can't do anything because I'm old. I can't do anything because I'm uneducated. I can't do anything because I'm too good for that job. We all need to be willing to get involved in whatever way that we possibly can. Now, I don't see in here where the old woman in the wheelchair was out there building the wall. But you can bet that she was out there rooting for them and having some dinner ready for them when they got back and being a part of the process and whatever that they could do. I think a key word in this chapter is section. It's used 13 times that they were assigned a certain section to work on the wall. And you've got this section, and you're working next to this section. You don't all have the same section. It doesn't always compose the same thing, but you're all involved. No one person in the group could construct the whole wall by himself. It was done in sections, working together and filling the gaps in between. You know, and one section didn't say, well, I think I'll just, you know, do this section off here and by myself and just build me a little round wall here by myself. No, you joined it with everybody else. You worked together to get the whole project done. Ephesians chapter 2. And again, it's a scripture we're familiar with, and it talks about the church and our role in it. Ephesians 2, verse 19, "Now therefore you're no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God." We're working together. You're not a stranger when you're a part of God's family. Verse 20, "Having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building, being fitted together, grows to a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit." So we're working together to be God's building, helping each other. We're all given different spiritual gifts of different types, but we are to do what we've got with what we've got. Are you serving in your section? Or is your wall kind of laying down here somewhere and everybody else is building their wall? We all got to build our sections. If we haven't been, it's time to grab a brick and get to work. Okay, and getting along with people. Okay, the second one is that God uses all kinds of people. We talked about leadership first, and then God uses all kinds of people. And in this process, you do also have to realize that some people just will not work. Now, that can get discouraging on the job when you're, you know, busy doing your work and you see the other guy slacking and not picking up their part. And in the church, it can feel the same way and in any aspect of life. But it's a fact of life. And so because somebody else doesn't work, does that mean that, well, I'm not going to do very much because then I'd be doing their job? Now, it's just going to happen. Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 5. "For whatever reason, you're going to have people that just, as a part of the group, aren't going to pull their weight." Nehemiah 3:5, it says, "The next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa." Now, the men of Tekoa lived about 20 miles away. They had to come in every day until a certain point later on, we'll get to later, but they had to come in every day to commute to work. And so they had double duty in a way. It says, "The next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa, but their nobles would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors." They had these hardworking men and women that would come in and work hard, but their nobles wouldn't do so. They were too good Or they didn't want to work under that person. Well, if they're going to be in charge, I don't want to. I'm not going to help out then. They didn't like who was in charge, because it says that they would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors. Well, if you'd let me be in charge, well, then I'll go and I'll be the one telling everybody what to do. Because they just refuse to work. So what do you do when somebody else refuses to work? Even the noble, even the guy that should be the leader, is not doing his job. You do like the men of Tekoa did. They put their shoulders to the work. Sorry, Tekoa was about 10 miles from Jerusalem, a 20-mile round trip, still quite a commute. Another example of leaders doing a wrong example, but they went ahead and worked, and we'll get to them a little bit later too, the men of Tekoa. Jeremiah chapter 48, verse 10, I'll just quote it. You might want to look at Jeremiah chapter 48, verse 10. It says, "Cursed are those who refuse to do the Lord's work, who hold back their swords from shedding blood." Now, we're not going around killing people, but yet we're in God's army. You know, we are fighting this fight. And it says, "Cursed are those who refuse to do the Lord's work." The nobles in Tekoa didn't want to work. They wanted somebody else to do it. They were too good, too proud. "I'll never work for anyone like that, whatever the reason. What's our excuse?" Well, you realize there are just some that won't work. We just have to work like the Tekoans did. Okay, the fourth, and how to work with people, is that realize some people do more work than others. Any given circumstance, you're going to find that. Although we're called to all work together, again, some are more capable than others in certain areas, and some have more opportunity, some better health, and that type of thing. But all things considered, there's that 20-80 rule will oftentimes apply. And if you're familiar with that, it's that 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Now, if you're one of those 20% that's doing 80% of the work, you're going to be looking and say, "Well, why am I doing all the work?" And they don't. And that can be discouraging too, but you realize it's human nature. That's life in almost any given situation. Any church, any project, there'll always be slackers. Let's notice Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 5, where it says that the next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa. Now, these men of Tekoa, on their 20-mile commute each day, and their nobles were good for nothing, they were slacking. Notice Nehemiah 3 and verse 27, it talks about another group of people working, and next to them, the men of Tekoa repaired another section. Not only did the men of Tekoa get in and work, in spite of the fact their nobles wouldn't work, but they got done with their job and said, "What can I do now?" Now, some of you have people that work for you like that. "You don't need to do the job. Okay, what do I do now?" Some people in the church are that way. So, "Okay, I did this. What do I do now?" You know, and then just get involved. And others hold back. So these people did more work than others. They refused to allow the bad example, even of their leaders, to hold them back. They went the extra mile. The men of Benoni did the same thing. Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 8. Next down the line, in this section being built, were his countrymen led by Benoni. Some of your translations will say, I think it's Bani, but most of the transcripts have Benoni. It says, next in line were his countrymen led by Benoni, the son of Henadad, the leader of the other half of the district of Keilah. Now, Nehemiah 3, verse 24. Next was Benoni, son of Hadad, who built another section of the wall from Azariah's house to the angle and to the corner. And so he builds another section. Okay, so you got these guys that are doing more work than the others. A lot of people just built their section. That's fine. It was good. But there are people that just do more than others. And if we can realize that and say, okay, that's life. And maybe if you're one of those that does more than others, God rewards our enthusiasm in our work. Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 4. Meshulam, son of Berechiah, grandson of Meshezabel, built the next section. Nehemiah 3, verse 30. Meshulam, son of Berechiah, built the next section, which was in front of his house. So he went and he built this section of wall, and he said, okay, I got that done. Now, nobody's been assigned to working in front of my house. I'll do that next. And so he put the good of the whole first. Then he went ahead and said, okay, I'll build this next section. I can do that. Stepping out, doing more. Luke chapter 17, verse 10. Luke chapter 17, verse 10. There are those that just get by. There are those that refuse to work. There are those that just get by. And there are those that go above and beyond. Luke 7, verse 17, verse 10. So likewise you, when you've done all those things which are commanded, say, we're unprofitable servants. We've done that which was our duty to do. The men of Tekoa said, we built our section. We've done that which is our duty to do. What's next? What can I do? Who can I help? How can I help the person that isn't in quite such good physical condition? Or that does need an extra hand? So have we just done our job and that's it? Or do we do more than others and love it? Okay, number five, you'll find that some people work with passion. Now, there are going to be those that do their job. There are going to be those that don't do their job at all. There are going to be those that go above and beyond. And then there are going to be those that, I mean, really have a passion for it, and it shows. There's one guy in the chapter, out of all the hundreds who are building the wall, that stands out. Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 20. It says, next to him, Baruch, son of Zabai, zealously repaired another section. Oh, good, good, good. Here I go. Okay, I want to build this section. He's out there and he's getting up early and he's staying there late. And he's building his section. He's having fun. And he's saying, hey, isn't this great? Right, this is great, you know. And he's just enthusiastic. And he finishes his job, and then he says, oh, I'm going to go build the next one. Now, the Hebrew word zealous means to burn or to glow. You know, he's burning a lot of energy. He's just glowing. He's just involved. And don't you like to see that? Now, sometimes you say, well, that guy's just, you call him zealous, I call him a kiss-up. You know, he's just trying to make points. Well, he's just zealous. They don't put down somebody that's really out there doing the work. He's not just serving, but he's on fire. Now, God would have us to be on fire. You know, it says about bringing the kingdom that Jesus Christ, his name would be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, and he's going to bring the kingdom, and it says that he will bring it about with zeal. You know, Jesus Christ has zeal for you. Zeal for the kingdom. And we need to work and be zealous. Nehemiah 4 verse 6 says that the people worked with all their heart. And so the people were doing a good job, and it wasn't taking anything away from those that were working with all their heart. But one guy stood out as having zeal. And that's fun to see. And I think God enjoys that, and his name was written there for us to look at. Some of you are like Baruch, willing to go the extra mile, burn with zeal and passion in your service for God and his people. Okay, another thing you'll find as people are doing the work is some work as families. I think you find in the Church of God, you find families. We just ordained a deacon whose grandfather had been a deacon, families doing the work, it's just fun to see. There are at least six different workers, plus an unknown number of priests here that repaired the portions that were nearest to their own homes. I think let them do that because it's close to your home. It wasn't taken away anything. It had to be done. And they built in front of their homes as families. Now we need to, if you're a family, do the work near your own home by being a good example. You know, where your family is a good example of helping and serving others. And you look and you see, well, that family is helping out. Everybody is not blessed to have the nuclear family. There are bachelors and there are singles and there are widows and widowers and people in all sorts of different circumstances. Not everyone worked as families on the wall here. But when you can work as a family to be a good example to others, that, I think, pleases God. Do the work near your own house, set a good example, and do the work. Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 3, it says, the fish gate was built by the sons of Hassana. The boys got together, constructed the wall. They're working as brothers out there, families working together. They laid the beams and set up the doors and installed its bolts and bars. And then again, Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 12, and Shalom, son of Halosheph, and his daughters repaired the next section. Well, he didn't have sons, worked as a family with the daughters. And so work as a family to do God's work and God's will when you have that opportunity to serve the greater family. They served in front of their homes to help build the whole wall. And then some worked outside with others when they got done with their own homes. And some went to their homes after they got done with somebody else's. But don't neglect the work of God by focusing on self and say, well, I'll do this just for my family. But it's a family working together for the good of the whole. That's pleasing to God, as God is family. To do God's work, we need to cooperate with one another. Not criticize and not say, well, look at this, we've done this and your wall's not very good. It says, if your wall's not very good, we're going to finish ours and we're going to help you with yours. And work with one another. Whatever anyone else does, good or bad, we need to do our job in doing the work. Whatever that job is. Realize as we work together, leaders need to set the pace. God uses all kinds of people. Some people won't work at all. Some people are going to do more than others. Some people are going to be zealous, and some will work as families. But we all need to do the work of God together. Now, we'll have announcements and a song, and going to come back and expound on this a little bit with some specifics, taking off, as I said, in announcements from Acts chapters 1 and 2 about the beginning of the building of the church. And how God brought everybody together, even from different nations and different backgrounds, to build his church in the early New Testament. And some of the lessons that we can learn in continuing to build the church of God as a local congregation.